the 19th and 20th century, and urban history. The next speaker, Elizabeth Drummond, is based at Loyola Marymount University in California. She received her PhD from Georgetown University and is currently assistant professor of modern Central European history at Loyola Marymount University. She has published on various aspects of German-Polish national conflict and is currently working on a manuscript entitled To Each His Own, National Identity and Nationalist Mobilization in the German-Polish Borderland of Poznania, 1886 through 1914. Our third speaker, Grzegorz Krzywiec, is assistant professor at the Institute of History at the Polish Academy of Sciences in Warsaw. At present, he is preparing a book on modern Polish antisemitism in the European context, 1883-1939. Together with Tim, he has organized a very successful conference last month in Warsaw in this context. He has also published works on Polish nationalism, including a political biography of Roman Dmowski, Chauvinism po Polsku, Chauvinism in Polish, 1886-1905. An English version is in preparation, will be published with Peter Lang in 1914. I would like to add that 2014. I would like to add that this book was awarded the very prestigious Clio Award, one of the most prestigious prizes in Polish historiography. So a very successful colleague indeed. Grzegorz's research interests include Polish antisemitism, far-right politics, and fascism in Central and Eastern Europe. We will proceed as the program says, so I invite Tim Buchen to give his paper, A More Efficient Strike Than With Bats, Boycott Practice and Discourse in Galicia Prior to World War I. Floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you, Francois. Thank you for the organizers for inviting me to this conference. And in my paper, I will talk about anti-Jewish boycotts, anti-Jewish boycott campaigns in Habsburg Galicia around 1900. In the proposal, it said a bit more about setting these boycott campaigns into the larger context of other boycotts in Galicia, like the, as Michael Miller yesterday mentioned, the Polish-Ukrainian boycott and the Polish-German or the Polish boycotts on German products. But I decided that it's might be more interesting to present just the functioning of this anti-Jewish boycott campaign, and then afterwards, since we have a truly Polish panel here, we can, in the discussion, maybe relate it to other boycotts in Galicia in this time. Demanding and declaring boycott was a central element of political communication, and since it offered the opportunity to condense at least three important fields of political meaning. The first one, boycott campaigns could connect speaking about the own community with the identification of the opponent and to label a crucial problem for the well-being of the economic development of the in-group, and showing at the same time a possible solution. A second meaning was to connect economic discourse on the highest national and imperial level. This also referring to this debate about a national economy, and to connect this discourse on the national level with local context and with very specific situations on the ground. And this made it often adoptable for a variety of themes and interests, and thus boycott campaigns could be very productive for different players on the ground, as I will show in my paper. And this third field, boycott campaigns connected speech with practice, or one can say they connected agitation with action, and established a mechanism in which a shift in everyday life behavior, the consuming and trade behavior of the normal people, so to say, could be checked by social control. and by directing the attention to the deeds of all members of the society and accompanying it with a constant discourse, the meaning of the political in everyday life increased and it became part of the life of ever more people. Acting and talking mutually perpetuated itself. This demonstration of the will to act and to change reality, and not only talk about changing the reality, to show solutions for social problems and to demonstrate to be accepted as a leader of the in-group in the process of social change, was and is an essential step to political legitimation. And in Habsburg Galicia around 1900, political legitimation became more and more a matter of elections. Therefore, I think we should analyze the agency of boycott campaigns on various levels. One could ask, did they help to communicate a political program which was hitherto abstract in only recently politicized spheres such as the Galician countryside? Did the campaign bring attention and convincibility to its protagonists? Did the linking of practice and discourse enforce the belief that boycott was necessary for the well-being of the community? Did the implementation of a legitimate boycott help established players to give older or traditional demands new or additional conviction? Did feelings of bondage between the members of the in-group grow when the conviction existed that it improved the situation for their community with a conscious selection? A conscious selection of consumption and of business partners. Was boycott in the name of the in-group seen as an act of altruism? The obvious question about success or failure of boycott is of course the question whether consumers really stopped buying from Jews in this case, and if this really weakened the Jews economically and forced them to change their behavior or even to leave the economic life as the logic of boycott tells us. And here the answer for this time period is rather no, it did not. But crucial for the understanding of the analyzed Galician case, and this is also referring to the speech of Michael Miller yesterday, was the imagination of the economy as a zero-sum game, where a limited amount of goods, money, and land within a given territory had to be shared among its inhabitants. But neither the economic space nor was clear in Galicia, nor did Galicia's inhabitants form a closed, hermetically sealed economic community or unit. Galicia was part of the Austrian part of the dual monarchy, and Austria-Hungary tried to establish a common economic policy, but the centers, Vienna and Budapest, regarded Galicia rather as a colony, as a raw material supplier and outlet market than as an integral part of the country, worth for politics of development. On the other hand, the process of globalization had reached Galicia a long time ago. The collapse of corn prices and the competition of industrial products hit the Galician economy very hard. The traditional estate society was still visible, with a land-owning Polish-speaking nobility, a largely Jewish middleman stratum engaged in trade, money-lending, and petty craft, and a huge Ukrainian and Polish peasant class, only liberated from serfdom in 1848, emancipated by law completely, altogether with the Jews in 1867. But this social construction was eroding quickly with the rise of the market economy, and Jews who, since 1867, were allowed to buy land, entered the agrarian economy, which was increasingly left by the Polish gentry. And this shift in social and economic status of this group, it was accompanied by conspiracy theories and by several unrests. And a second important impact on the boycott campaign against Jews in Galicia was the shifting in the debate about the Jewish question since the late 1880s. Anti-Jewish voices since then tended to pay more attention to the non-Jews than to the Jews. Now, It was not the criticism on Judaism and the Jews as alleged obstacles to assimilation, as it was in the decades before. From now on, the acculturation of Jews into the majority was rejected, and on the contrary, Christians should close themselves up against Jews economically, in social, cultural, and political life. For the economic sphere, this agitation demanded the foundation of Christian shops, Christian corporations, and economic circles without Jewish involvement. Also, the banishment of taverns run by Jews was an important motive in the anti-Semitic rhetoric of the day. While in the decades before, the Jewish question, I'm speaking here about the mainstream, not about some voices, should be solved in that way, that visible Jewish otherness, like in language, clothing, behavior, and the alleged materialistic ethic of Jews, should vanish, and from now on, the Jews as the bearers of this otherness should disappear. Emigration, one could hear from the new anti-Semites, would be the consequence when Jews were no longer part of the agrarian economy, when no one would buy anything in their shops and taverns, and no Christian would buy money from them. The reasons for this shifting in the debate on the Jewish question had been the pogroms of 1881 on the one hand, when indeed thousands of Jews left Russia via Galicia and in that way made mass immigration visible and imaginable on a larger scale. And on the other hand, it was a new protagonist in the discourse and on the political stage that propagated this new kind of anti-Semitism. And these protagonists arrived on stage due to the enlargement of suffrage from the middle 1880s on. It was nationalistic populists and Catholic clericals. And ethnic nationalism, and Catholicism was in these two camps, or three camps, one could say, the base for association, and as such did per se exclude Jews from the community. These camps were all anti-liberal, also in terms of economy. And they wanted to use economy as a purpose of their community. Every issue concerning economic life should contribute directly to the abstract, imagined community. Be it the Ukrainian or the Polish national movement, nation, or be it the Christian or Catholic people. So it was the interest of these groups, of these communities, not of the individual. And this discourse, speaking in the name of the nation or of the people, the Christian people, made it possible to speak of altruism concerning economic relations, while liberalism could be blamed as egoistic. And I think this is a very important point to the legitimacy of nationalism, of this clerical movement, and also of socialism. Those ideas were, one could say, continuity of organic conceptions of society that had their roots both in Christian cooperative thinking as in Völkisch nationalist thinking. The discourse about the economic interest of the community that had to be defended against the interest of the Jews, and a constant conflict between Jews and Christians as natural units, was brought into the Galician countryside and small towns by a great number of new and often ephemeral newspapers that appeared from the late 1870s on. Those newspapers were closely tied to political movements and promoted the foundation of Christian cooperatives, of shops, banks, reading rooms, and even taverns. In letters to the editors, oftentimes probably written by the editors themselves, they reported of successful initiatives in specific villages, showing them as positive and good examples, and criticized other local communities where Jews allegedly had too much influence on the hierarchies or exploited the peasants. Those Christians who bought in Jewish shops, drank in Jewish taverns, or worked for Jewish employees, so the readers were told, were harming their own community. The social control of the traditional village community was widened with these newspapers to a larger context. The behavior of every single member of the imagined community on every single day was said to have a direct influence of the development of the well-being of the community. There was only good or bad. One could only support the own or support the foreign group. Within the logic of this discourse, every deal for the peasants, be it shopping, be it selling of a cow or a piece of land, was not only to be rated if the price and the quality was correct, but also who would be profiting from it, who would be benefiting. While one should think that one makes a voluntary deal only when one is convinced to benefit from it, and so both sides benefit, this was not the case according to the press. Here, every deal which was also a benefit for a Jew was presented as a bad deal in the long run, even it might have been a good business in the business as such. As the peasant paper called The Bee put it in 1896, who gives money to a Jew pays with Christian blood and sweat. And that is why the newspapers presented Jews as always cheating when doing business. Because the level of the benefit for the anonymous community, be it the nation or the people, was abstract and was a long-run goal, and so hard to explain, while the direct private business was not. The abstract imagined community could nevertheless become experienced in certain situations. For example, in the discursive othering, in speaking of the own values and symbols and in deeds that were related with this discourse. Such situations for experiencing belonging were elections and election campaigns, which had a crucial function in bringing together discourse and practice and turning the belonging into an experience for all the people attending it. Due to the Habsburg election system, elections to the Viennese Reichsrat and the Galician Diet always saw one winner and one loser in every selection district. And this situation led to enormous polarization on the spot. Oftentimes, the editors of the popular newspapers started as candidates themselves, with harsh campaigns against their candidate opponents in the papers. Rallies in advance of regular elections, of by-elections, or of second ballots brought the candidates into the village to mobilize their electorate. A second possibility to experience belonging to the imagined community was the subscription to these newspapers or being member of one of the Christian cooperatives. But the discourse of boycotting the Jews was not only kept alive by intellectuals and politicians and by those who wrote letters to the editors. It was also important that Christian entrepreneurs and shopkeepers advertised in these newspapers. The advertisement, the paying for the advertisement, kept the newspapers alive economically. And one can find in these papers always lots of advertisement for clothing, for furniture, music instruments, tools for farming, different things. And they were all listed under the slogan of the newspapers, which was printed on the last page, buy only from Christians, which was simply the positive formulation for the boycott of Jewish shops. The advertisement supported these newspapers and main agendas, of which was anti-Jewish boycott. The businessmen certainly hoped to improve their business when being printed on a white list of ethical shops and supporting this discourse that every gulden spent to a Jew was lost, while every gulden spent to a Christian will be kept within the imagined community. When one looks at the massive anti-Semitic agitation at this popular press, one might be astonished that Jewish shops and taverns still made their income. Actually, the strong presence of Jews in the Galician economy was hardly affected by these campaigns. When the Christian shops was neither cheaper nor better than the Jewish one, and when the Christian employee offered not at least the same or better conditions than the Jewish one, then there was no reason to choose the Christian. Nevertheless, did the boycott campaign and the anti-Semitic agitation in newspapers and election rallies have an impact on Christian-Jewish relations? In the summer of 1898, a wave of anti-Jewish violence shocked the country. During 2 months, in more than 400 townships, did Christians rob and destroy Jewish houses, taverns, and shops, mock their inhabitants with rough music, and smashing window panes with stones and bats. The police and the gendarmerie, sometimes informed before the robbery by members of the Jewish community, was unable to control the situation until the governor declared the state of emergency over 33 districts. I have to shorten here a bit because I'm running out of time. Just to say that these wave of riots started after one incident where rioters had been shot by police, and as a consequence in the surrounding villages, people somehow punished the Jews for alleged provocation, but also they saw that it was possible to rob the Jews since the police was on the countryside not able to stop it and to prevent it. And so this was this own dynamics of violence appeared, which was mainly addressed to in order to robbing Jews, just getting alcohol and goods, but also mocking them and showing Jews that they were not part of their community. But the perpetrators, it was a few thousand people, did not aim to destroy the Jewish taverns, shops, and manors in order to erase them from the agrarian economy. They did not want to help Christian shops and shopkeepers to replace them and to help establish a Christian middle class. They were not motivated by anti-Semitic fantasies of a Christian economy. And there was no motivation to change the tradition of Jewish-Christian interaction known to them for centuries. In most of the cases, the neighborhoods were re-established after the violence, many victims recompensated and perpetrators punished. The so-called anti-Semitic excesses did not follow the plans of anti-Semitic politicians, nor could the latter be satisfied with the consequences. The electorate was discredited by the eruption of violence, and so was anti-Semitism as a political movement, soon labeled as an important factor for the outbreak of violence and disavowed as chaotic and violent. The violence so did not follow the ideas of the boycott campaign, but as a consequence, the boycott discourse changed. Its main protagonists, editors and politicians, referred to the violence that happened, gave it rational meaning, and claimed higher intentions for the escalation of the riots. In the Viennese parliament, Galician anti-Semites stated that the riots had been an act of self-defense of the desperate Christian masses against Jewish usury and fraud, just as if the majority of the rural population really was involved into a constant conflict against the Jews. Also, in their own popular press, did these politicians present the excesses in such a way as if they had been done in the name of a common goal, as if they had been a means to a clear end, and not be an end in itself, and as if the option for personal material gaining had not been the only motivation for so many people to join in. The anti-Semitic rural press embedded the riots into their own interpretation of the unrelenting economic conflicts between Christian and Jews, in which Christians were victims and Jews perpetrators. They presented it as a clear fact that every Christian was involved in this conflict as a member of the Christian community. Nevertheless, they could not welcome the excess as such. Instead, they recommended a most consequent boycott of Jewish shops. The boycott, one could read in the newspapers, would be a more efficient strike against the Jews than an attack with sticks. The violence had brought recompensation and punishment, and as such had helped the Jews more than the Christians, so one could read. Boycott, thus, would really weaken the positions of the Jews in the economy, and they finally would have to leave the country. Disposed of all income, the Jews were simply forced to push along and find another host to exploit. One may conclude that the politicians of anti-Semitism tried to adopt the events that had been out of their control and put them into the framework of economic struggle and everyday behavior. Even though their ideas of the reality between Jews and non-Jews differed from the reality of the peasants, they tried to construct a unity of interests and interpretations of the needs. Only the choice of the means had differed. The ends are the same: getting rid of the Jews. Also, by using the metaphors of the strike against the Jews, the mentioning of the sticks and the excesses as something well meant but badly executed, they adopted the rhetoric of action, Doing something, not only talking, became part of the political identity of the anti-Semitic peasant parties. The rhetoric of the beating, of doing something, even more powerful than physical violence, radicalized the agitation and used the excesses to demonstrate the willingness to fight, consequently, for its aims. Even though the boycott campaign was not successful in the sense that it did much harm to Jewish entrepreneurs economically, it was a very successful topic in political communication. Social control, demonizing Jewish shopkeepers and moneylenders, demonstrating the will to act, offering a simple solution for economic problems, and strengthening the imagined community as discourse and as experience in situations, the boycott campaign was responsible for the implementation of the turn from assimilation to anti-Semitism. The rhetorical field of boycott made it harder to speak of a common economic area of all Galician inhabitants, let alone a community or a nation containing various ethnic groups. The mentioning and the remembering of violent acts as the excesses in 1898 in the discourse of boycott, the ideas that of an open and intense conflict existed between Jews and Christians. And in the same time, it offered a solution, total segregation. Thank you.